Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there's enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. I am so honored today because I have Deep with me. Deep is known by many from the music industry as an artist and CEO, best known for discovering multi-platinum music producers, Faye and Chill, whom amassed 5 million music publishing catalog with thousands of syncs on television and film. Deep is the founder of companies in entertainment, tech, and other sectors, with his most recent venture being a disruptive real estate investment company. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Dr. Caroline. I'm excited.
I'm excited to have you.
It's been a while.
But I'm excited to share you with everybody because I know you are such a wealth of knowledge, but you've had such ups and downs in your entrepreneurial journey. But I would love for you to kind of just take us through your journey, how you got here today, and then we can dive deeper into it.
Sure. It's been, like you said, ups and downs. I actually started in the music entertainment industry, but if you rewind a bit, I've been involved in music entertainment my whole life since I was young, actually. And I got into you remember when the internet started to hit, where Netscape Navigator wasn't really a thing, but Instant Messenger was the thing.
Yes.
And then came obviously MySpace and, Facebook and all the tech stuff. So I was intrigued by tech, but I was always involved in music. But when I started, I was so young and I was watching people who were actually, doing an old school way of recording, passing out cassette tapes rather than CDs. And I was such a kid. But, it just kind of blossomed. My interest peaked with the tech evolution, and then I got into different things, creative things. I was working in retail, but I would leave when I was 16, 17 years old. I would leave my retail store. I worked for Foot Locker, Champ Sports. I was managing a store that young, but I knew I always had ambitions to work in tech and entertainment. So I would leave, and that's what I would do. I would work my full-time job and I would leave and I would do that type of stuff. So eventually I landed an actual job people don't know, with Comcast Corporation, and I was doing a lot of stuff at Comcast, but it's like a double life. I'd leave Comcast, and then I would, I'd work on tech stuff, and then I would go to the studio over nighttime, throw my artist hat on, be doing live shows and events, and then I'd come in the next day like nothing happened, right? So I had the best of both worlds. I was able to understand product development and operations and HR and how things work, but then it's kind of a conflict because in the industry, you already know, in the industry it was just much more chaotic, and there were really no rules, and no one kind of there was no formula. So I had to kind of figure it out, and that was a hard part for me, because what I thought was good business in the industry, it wasn't. What was perceived to be as being good or structured, there is no structure, and it's you're trying to see what sticks and figure it all out. So for me, that's kind of what happened. That started, and then as business blossomed, and I got into the industry. I knew that I wanted to be a byproduct and have brand extension. I knew I would want to get into different fields, different sectors, different industries, and I would use that as a platform. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. So, I love it. Yeah, keep going.
So I'm saying, so that's what I did. So now, I'm involved in other things now. Went from the industry into a bunch of other things. I don't want to move too fast. I'll let you do that. But we got into other sectors, other things. And, and they all work in conjunction, but the majority of it was because of what I learned in corporate and then the music industry as well.
I love that you mentioned the double life, because a lot of people assume that it's overnight success, or they just quit their job and focus fully on their business. And that can happen, but not always. And I love that you did tap into that. So what was that kind of living that double life? Like you said, it was best of both worlds.
Caroline, how deep can we get here?
How deep do you want to go?
I mean, listen, it was difficult for me because there were different elements that played a part in what I was doing. So if we want to get raw and be authentic, I was 17 years old when I graduated high school and I left and I moved out on my own. And at that time I had, and this is interesting, honestly, you know, I'm sure you would appreciate this. I actually had a troubled childhood. I did. I didn't have much, I didn't have a lot of like guidance, and I didn't like authority much. And, I spent some of my youth time facilities, youth detention, actually. I never got in trouble with the law. These were places I was actually sent to. I never had like a criminal background or anything. But I spent some time in youth detention and facilities, boarding schools. I actually attended Valley Forge Military Academy. People don't really know, in some schools out the country. So with that being said, there were elements of running around, you know, being young and reckless, especially being involved in the hip hop entertainment industry. You know, there were elements of that, but I knew that I was intelligent enough, capable enough, and just, I don't know, I was just wired this way, that I could run, not businesses, but like I could work jobs in like Foot Locker and Champs and be a supervisor at the age, or manager at the age of 17 and 18 and run my own store, you know? So I took what I learned from there, you know, running around the streets and like, you know, the music entertainment when it was like a passion and hobby. First, and I took elements of that, and I was like, let me apply this to this. So that's where like the creativity, the branding, you know, the marketing, advertisement, day trading, attention came from, because that's elements of entertainment, right? But my point is, it was difficult, because when I was in ninth grade, my freshman year, I actually scored for the state in like fifth percentile, like highest in IQ, but I did horrible in school because I didn't like the whole, like, Gary Vee talks about this a lot as well. I always reference him with these things. I did horrible in school because I had to learn through creativity, you know? Yeah. I'm hands-on. Mm-hmm. Classroom, 36 people, 30-minute block scheduling. It was horrible for me. Or, you know, hour and a half long. Before block scheduling, they were like half-hour periods, right? So for me, I just didn't do well. I didn't want to apply myself, even though I knew I had the potential and the knowledge and, you know, skill set. I just didn't like it. So I say all that to say, for me, school education, I didn't really like too much, but I knew that I could acquire a wealth of knowledge by just learning, doing. So when I would go into Comcast, I would be like, you know, doing things in reference to tech, support, teaching, training, like all this stuff, you know, I would leave, you know, professional corporate hat on, and then I would leave. And it's like glasses, chains, jeans, Tim's, studio music blaring, and, you know, performing on stage. And it would be that whole element. It was deep when I was, you know, out, you know, within the industry. And they had no idea. They had no idea. And then I would come back in, and it's like praise after praise, train this, you know, lead meetings, this, do that, and the third, because they knew how knowledgeable I was, how experienced I was. So it was difficult, Dr. Caroline. It was super difficult. Then when I got deeper into the music business, I could not differentiate corporate integrity, moral impulse from like not just corporate, but just in the real world and in the streets. And like by the streets, I mean just not in corporate or not, you know, not in industry, just the real world. And, you know, a handshake is a handshake. You know, you look a man in the eyes when you speak, and the whole Warren Buffett, we can do a deal on a handshake and I will hold you, you know, that's our contract right there, our verbal agreement. And it wasn't like that in the industry. So it was very, very difficult. It turned me off when I learned the business of music and entertainment industry. It completely turned me off because I was so passionate about creating. And then when I started to learn the business and how cutthroat it was, and how your word wasn't your word, and you really get what you negotiate, not what you deserve. And we've experienced that. Like, we've had some losses, and we'll talk about that if you want, but we had losses in the industry, millions of dollars that our hands lost, and from people's mistakes or empty promises. So that was a long answer to your question. It was very difficult to switch from like corporate to like entertainment and live that second life. It was tough.
I believe it. And, you know, it's so interesting too, because like kind of starting with like Foot Locker, just how even growing up, like the authority aspect, it's because of the creativity, and school settings aren't always created equally for every kind of learner, and being able to express yourself the way you want to. But it's almost like you already knew that intuitively, whether it was happening or not, but being able to take those manager roles and running stores, running in the corporate world, but then like switching hats. But I'm curious too, with like also the business side of things with the music industry and how that really transformed from corporate to the business side of music, and how, like what you were saying, losing millions of dollars, what were some of the roadblocks that you did experience in those, in that industry?
It's a good question. It was not having, I can tell you offhand, it was not having the capital, not having the investors, not having the people to really, you know, kind of invest in you, mm-hmm. not having enough time. And, you know, when you're 17, 18, 19, 20, you're living on your own, you know, you have expenses, you're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to survive and take care of yourself. And regardless of how much money you make, a lot of times, like, we don't have the financial literacy that we would acquire later on in life, right? So yeah. It was kind of really, you know, difficult, because when I looked around, being from Philadelphia, being, you know, up north, East Coast, you know, mm-hmm. it was just, we didn't have many people. You go to LA, you see, you know, there's Silicon Valley uptown. Mm-hmm. You go down mm-hmm. in SoCal, and you see people from all over the world. There's a lot of trust fund, you know, babies as well. There's a lot of inheritance. But there's a lot of people who grind from the bottom as well. But for me, I just didn't have any of that. So what I did was, I knew that I didn't want to work a job forever, because I would spend my, at 17, 18, 19, 16, I would spend my night and weekends in those stores during the holidays and all. And then I would leave and do other stuff and run around the streets and then do shows and then music and stuff. I didn't sleep for days, but I knew I just didn't want to do that forever. I didn't transition into corporate. I was in my young 20s when I got into Comcast Corporation. And for me, doing that, I'll tell you this. This is a good story I never told. I remember being there one day and receiving an email, and they asked for some ideas for some creative thing that they were doing. And they wanted people to give ideas for some new products and some, you know, just to help with product development and all these things. This is me being disruptive, rebellious and defiant, not conforming to the social or corporate norm. And I wrote an email and responded to the entire floor and said, I just have a quick question. This is me in my like 21, 22. I'm like, listen, I have a question for you. I said, if you're doing this and, you know, you want people to kind of participate in this, who maintains the utility pad? Who, you know, the design pads? Like, are we getting royalties if, you know, this product is created and things are sold and all? Is there any equity we're receiving? Like, how does this work? And I shouldn't have done that. Well, no, I'm glad I did. And
I'm glad you did too.
I should have done it. But what I'm saying is that and this happened to me actually many times in my life. Here was a corporation that would take, I don't want to defame Comcast Corporation just in case of any sponsorships.
I won't tag them.
But what I'm saying is, like, for me, just at that age, being that young, what I will say is that I was not willing to give up, you know, IP for an exchange for nothing at all. I just wasn't. So at that point, I realized I got to get out and do things on my own. So I'm going to give you exactly what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Because of my childhood, because of my youth, I started something called Start National, Steering Teenage Adolescents Right on Track. And it was supposed to be a nonprofit, well, is a nonprofit organization. But at that time, I was working on it. And I thought to myself, if I can start a nonprofit organization, I can do what I love, because I can actually, you know, provide entertainment services, teach like recording and photography and choreography and all this stuff. I could get creatives together and we can do this for kids and inner city youth and people who maybe were just, you know, underrepresented. So I'm like, I could do this. If I do this and I can find the funding, the capital, build relationships, and eventually I can go and start my own record label. And then from there, I've already got the knowledge and experience and, you know, from retail and from corporate, in marketing and advertisement and product development and brand strategy and all this stuff, I can take, you know, pieces of that, elements of those things, and then kind of curate this whole like machine that'll work together. So now if I go somewhere and, you know, I want to do a concert somewhere and I need some investors to come in, it's much easier to get the capital and the investments that I need. And then I can kind of, legally find loopholes where I can hire the entertainment company or profit, you know, from the other side as well while doing what I love and making an impact. And that's what started. That's how I started. I was like, I have to get out of here. I remember walking in there one day and somebody looked at me. He said, "Why are you here?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Why are you here? You shouldn't be here." And I'm like, "Do you understand how much money I'm making in here now and how much you're making when I leave here?" Like, and he said, no, you're too good for this. You have to leave here. You need to go do something with your life. And he said, everything that you aspire to be, you're going to be that and more. You have to leave this corporation. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm gone. Leave it. And that's what I did. I started that way. I didn't look back. That was it.
Well, that's a powerful conversation too, of just really listening and somebody else seeing how impactful you can be in a different capacity and being able to pull into that or move into that and trust yourself essentially. And I think that's something you've done along the way, just like hearing your story, knowing you as well, but like not really listening to what others say that's negative or bring you down, but really focusing in on, yeah, beating to your own drum and being able to be successful in doing that and finding the resources, because you are really resourceful. Just all the things that you've learned and accumulated, you were able to create a machine essentially for everything you're doing and all the avenues you've gone. And, you know, it's just funny. I have to bring it up because I feel like you, I don't know if you still do this or not, but it's just okay. Like the sleep factor. Like, I feel like, I don't know if you sleep still, but because you have so many different things.
I'm actually glad that you bring that up. I mean, listen. You know, when I was younger, I was, you know, especially in entertainment, that's we preach that. We're like, no sleep, go get the bag. We're just going to work. You know, it doesn't matter what time, holiday, weekends, none of that stuff. Like, we just don't sleep. And there was a point in time, I would be up 3 days. And I mean 3 days, no sleep. You know, and then it starts to kind of go down to like 2 days. You know, 2 days and I'm up, and I would go to my best friend's house and he would go to sleep at 12 a.m., wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and I still be up. And he come back that day, and I still be up. So I did that. And I thought that was what we're supposed to do. But as I'm maturing, getting older and learning, there's a book called Why We Sleep. Have you read that?
I haven't.
Yeah, there's a book called Why We Sleep. I want to read it. I think it's by Dr. like Joe, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Dispenza.
Something like that.
But anyways, I think it might be his. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, so, you know, I just know how important it is that, and I don't sleep. I mean, I get like 4 hours maybe. And with that time, sometimes my mind's still running. I have learned to turn, you know, the noise off, which was super difficult for me for years. I couldn't figure it out. But I do try to sleep now. I don't stay up 2 days. Sometimes one full night if I have some things I have to do. We just did a webinar and I was up all night. But for the most part, I try to at least get 4 to 6 hours. I tried.
Well, trying is good, right? At least 4 or 6 hours. Because I know you just go, but that's part of like a lot of people will say, like the hustle and just not stopping and keeping going. But like, where is that fine line? So how did you kind of find that like balance for yourself where, you know, sometimes you're going to have to stay up a little bit later, but how did you kind of like tone it down a little bit in order to sleep a little more?
That's a good question. I just knew that like my mind started to be very noisy and I'm big on controlling the mind. I love Robert Greene's book, Mastery. And I've actually spoken to him before, but his book Mastery is great. And Success Through Stillness, I read a long time ago by Russell Simmons. And that helped me a lot, actually. And there were just some other things. And I was like, you know, I would lay down and I would dream about what I, you know, music, business, Comcast back then, that was crazy. So I would just dream about, I just didn't have peaceful sleep, honestly. And another thing is like, I didn't know how to turn the noise off. My mind works so fast. For like a V12, the gears are just constantly rotating, you know, right? So it's just going and going, and it's so noisy. It actually became painful sometimes where, you know, I would get migraines or, you know, I would wake up, listen, still to this day, I'd wake up at like 4 in the morning. I go to sleep at like 1, 2, wake up at 4:30, and I would have to take a shower just to kind of ease my mind. But in there, like I'm most creative, as weird as that, you know, as creative.
Shower thoughts.
Yeah, that's our most creative. And I would sit there and think more. And by the time I kind of go to sleep, it'd be 5, but like 6, 7, the sun's coming up and I'm up again. So I just knew it was unhealthy. You know, I started to feel like the health decline. I was like, okay, I'm a healthy person by nature. I mean, the way I eat, dieting, exercise, I implemented meditation, which was extremely helpful, So the meditation, you know, breathing and just sitting in silence, learning how to find, Russell Simmons talked about, I know you appreciate this. He talked about finding the gap between the time that you actually decide to meditate and the time that you do meditate. There's that gap right there. And, you know, understanding that process is what allowed me to kind of like, you know, just, I had to. And that was it. I knew things, I wasn't performing well. I was getting really irritated, really, you know, agitated by little things. I was creating more problems than actually resolving things. And I realized I was being busy and not productive. Which was a big one.
Yeah. So. No, there's definitely a differentiation between that. But the reason I really wanted to focus on the sleep aspect too is because a lot of times in the entrepreneurial world, you have so many ideas, the brain goes and everybody's a little bit different, but it's recognizing too, like your health is most important. So you can do all these things, but I love that you kind of like morphed your lifestyle too a little bit to really incorporate the things that were going to help you and benefit you, and kind of switching gears a little bit, because I know you've had a lot of success with a lot of different clients across so many industries, but I would love for you to share just like maybe one or two client success stories that just really stand out to you, even if it's recent or from a while back, just to kind of give it a little clearer picture.
So a question for you, would this be like, or do you want me to pick a specific industry or?
Whatever pops up in your mind.
Well, I mean, there's a few. Like one of my biggest like proud moments and accomplishments has to be my younger brother, actually, because we worked together. You know, I introduced him to production, music production, when I was in the industry heavy. And you know, my mind was a little different because how I ran around being a hip hop artist, being in the streets, and in corporate, and his was a little different. And I was proud that he actually took the production and started just going in and hyper-focusing while he was actually in school and playing football and just, you know, on a straight line. And for him, so, you know, I kind of curated relationships along the way and kind of passed that to him and try to be as supportive as possible. And then he took the torch and ran with it and developed his own relationships and his, you know, his work ethic. And we went on with his production. He went on, multi-platinum selling producer. This is Fayo and Chill, who you were referencing. Yeah. He's my little brother. And one of my producers then, he's going on with his own career now. But they went on to sell 2 million records. Bryson Tiller, it could be triple platinum by now on his album. You know, they've worked with, they've had songwriters that work with Drake that they've worked with and produced for, and they have records for. Dreezy, Rick Ross, The Game, Raven Justice, Leanne V. There's so many people. We have 3,000 syncs on television and film. So the publishing catalog, as you stated, you know, generated at least 5 million within those 3 years, you know? And I'm so proud of him for that. Aside from that, yeah, I mean, that's gotta be like the biggest moment. It's a platinum plaque. Like I worked my whole life for something like that and I didn't get one, but my brother, who took the music production another level, got a platinum plaque, you know what I mean? And we got a gold one as well, so. That's got to be like my most proud moment because how hard we worked in entertainment. I'll give you another one briefly, quickly, would be the media agency, because you and I discussed like, you know, so the media agency reaction, our first client, put it this way, our first client, he was a billionaire. And it was cool because we're talking like Los Angeles. He owns some venues. He actually done millions of dollars in real estate investment transactions and all that stuff. And that kind of like, I want to say almost happened organically. It wasn't even him who I spoke to. There were some cold emails that went out, got into contact with a venue manager, talked to an executive assistant who I love today, but she was tough then and got me to him. And listen, he pulled up in a normal car. It wasn't a Lambo. It wasn't a Rolls Royce. You wouldn't even know. And I respected that so much. And the fact that actually was our first client when we were, you know, getting big and I moved to LA there. It was our first client in LA, I believe. And I think, that paid out like $36,000 for the year to do some email marketing and some advertisement for my agency. And that was big. And we would have kept going if the pandemic, they actually lost the building that they had forever. Prince performed there. Fergie performed there. Jaden Smith, like a lot of people had performed there. So that was a big moment for us because we saw what was first like a thought inception, come into fruition. And then here we are in another state, media agencies open, and our first client's a billionaire. I thought that was cool. So
I think that's pretty cool too. And I just kind of want to go back and highlight with your brother too, just all the resources of like what you were able to give that foundation and he ran with it, but being able to work together too, because a lot of times, sometimes when you work with siblings or family, how was that like working together with your brother?
Good question. No one asked me that before. Honestly, it's difficult. It's difficult. It is. I have to be real. And it's not because it's only difficult because we share a lot of the same ambitions, same desires, all that stuff. It's just that how can I explain this? It's not a bad thing. It's just that brand wise is where we clash. I like certain things. He likes certain things. I like certain colors, certain textures. He likes certain colors, certain textures. We come from two different music eras. I come from the Jay-Z's, the Nas's, the Biggie's, the Pac's. And, he comes from the new age trap music, drill music, more melodic, more harmonized. But, I was able to evolve with it. Even recording myself then, and then actually playing the executive side, and just still in it, we're there with it. Like we understand where we have an ear. We know what needs to be. We know what song charts. We know what the tempo should be in a production and what's competing right now and all that stuff and little nuances and engineering and stuff. But my point is, we clash on the branding side. That's where we clash a lot at. So sometimes, I'm more of the techie person. I'm the numbers, very analytical. I have to understand how things operate. I'm the visionary. I know what I see, what I like. I can be super creative with that, even if it's designing a sneaker. I know in my head, what is this going to look like? But I can't draw. What I mean?
Yeah.
But I know. But so with him, it's opposite. With him, he's hands-on and he can design and draw and all that stuff. But then when it comes to the tech side or understanding the vision, he'll catch that a little later. And that's okay. It's a beautiful, thing. But for the most part, listen, as far as his production, music production career is concerned, once he, he was out in Los Angeles for a while. Once he was there developing his relationships, he took that on his own. That was all him, So at that point, we weren't necessarily working together when it came to business, just more on the creative side, just with ideas. I would bounce ideas off of him. He would bounce them off of me. And we would collab when it came to ideas and thoughts. But as far as execution was concerned, he did it. He did it.
Yeah. No, I love it. I always like to know too, because, sometimes it can clash different mindsets. You come from the same family, but sometimes it's a little different. But thank you for sharing that. And just even with your other client too, the billionaire, just how you were able to really use your resources again to help somebody. And I love how humble he sounded as well, of just showing up as the human, being able to connect and being able to use resources he knew that would be able to deliver. And you did for him and his company as well. But I love that you were able to share those two, because I think they're so unique, but also powerful in what you get to help people with as well. But I would love to hear just maybe two or three tips. I know you probably have a book full or volumes, but two or three tips of what you wish you would have known in the beginning that you know now when it comes to entrepreneurship.
Right. I would say one thing, biggest thing is, and Damon John said this in his book, Power of Broke. And I said this on the Katie Coaching podcast, True Me. There's never a perfect time. You can only make time perfect. That's a big one. Because for me, being a creative, got to wait to the production is right and the branding is right and all this stuff, right? And we're too worried about the outside noise and judgment of putting content out there. So that was a big one for me. Another one was a huge one, and I always go by this, is the mind doesn't know how to differentiate between positive and negative thought processes at all. Yes. It doesn't know how to filter or screen them. So it will readily translate what's in your subconscious, what you're feeding your mind, into its physical equivalent. And that was big. I read that in Think and Grow Rich with Napoleon Hill, because he talked about that so much. And, you know, and that compound effect of thinking negative, or in the industry, or, you know, corporate, this is wrong, this isn't going to work, this is bad, you know, this deal is not for me, and I can't trust this person. That starts to compound, and it will produce that, you know, and it makes things much more difficult. The other one is being fearless. Mm-hmm. I'm fearless. I'm fearless. I don't care about a no. I don't care about rejection. Do you see me? I don't care about rejection or no. I just don't.
Yeah.
Fearless. So that's a big one. Now, there's a fine line between being fearless and delusional and being reckless.
Good point.
I don't care. I don't care how, if you're going to say no, I'm going to be persistent. I'm fearless. So those are the three tips.
Those are great. And then what are you currently working on when it comes to music, tech, everything you got going on?
No, that's a good question. No, I'm joking. So a lot. I'm getting into, like, we want to push the culture forward at all times. We do. And we want ownership, right? So right now, like, you know, when you look at these platforms, we don't have much ownership. And by we, I'm talking about just music culture, youth culture. We're the ones who are blowing it up. We're the ones who are, you know, putting the eyes and ears and content, you know, deploying it. We're the one building engagement. We're the one building these platforms. We're building these brands, right? We're wearing them. We're being seen with them. We're shouting them out. We're eating them. We're drinking them, whatever it is. Yeah. So for me, I just want to continue to push the culture forward and just build our own platform in our own world where we can have equity in it, right? So now, as far as the music entertainment is concerned, we were able to, like, get out of the whole, like, you know, CDs and records and all that into streaming. I was actually working on a mobile app at that time called Song Effects, transitioning from being an artist to actually being, like, artist, tech entrepreneur and all that stuff. And that was, again, didn't have capital or investors, right? So Song Effects was what SoundCloud is today with microblogging. And we actually sent it to Silicon Valley. They wanted it, and then they looked at it and they were like, there's no traction, too early. Some people were like, oh, we love the idea, but there's no market for this. And boom, Apple Music hits, boom, SoundCloud hits. And I had that happen to me many times. So my point is, what we're doing in entertainment now is this. We're transitioning out of streaming now. Now we're getting into NFTs, getting into blockchain. Right, you love this, like, so this is what we're doing now. So what I want to do now is kind of like the smart contracts. Why can't we own our own publishing and deal with the networks, television networks, when we want to license on a block? Why can't we do that on a blockchain? Why does a person who is extremely talented have to go find a record deal or publisher, get in this insane publishing deal or whatever? Or why can't we license the music through a smart contract on a blockchain, you know, to a network? So we want to do that. NFTs, building, you know, virtual concerts. Mm-hmm. Put on your goggles. Why don't you and the label do a record deal here? I don't have to fly to wherever to see. Or if I want to perform in, you know, if I want our artists to perform in England, why fly them? If we listen, Snoop did 20, 25 million in a day. You're not doing that. Some people aren't doing that in their entire career, you know. Deals that have to be recouped, you know, they're not getting their publishing, they're not getting any, like, you know, royalties. It's known that, I don't want to mention a name, but some digital aggregators are, you know, sending $400 million out to pay artists, and it's going directly to the major labels and not to the artists at all. It's supposed to, right? So, you know, why aren't artists receiving their royalties, right? So a lot of this stuff is going on right now, but why can't we control our own? Why can't we use the blockchain? Why can't we do a lot of virtual concerts? And what if you wore one of your favorite artists' shirts and merch, and then you're just like, you're a friend of yours wants to go to the next virtual concert, and you're just kind of like, maybe you grew and you're over it. You're not even a fan of that artist anymore. Why not just sell the virtual t-shirt, the merchandise to her as an NFT? And that artist still make money, regardless of if you're a fan of her, right? So that's what we're doing right now. That's what we're working towards. And then the other thing would be, we have our virtual credit repair company, which is cool because we, how many people, millions of dollars transacted in the industry every day, billions and millions and millions of dollars. People don't have credit. They just don't have credit, right? It's horrible. So we did that so that we can educate. Jay-Z just did a Kevin Hart interview and he talked about it. Why not take what we're doing now, execute, curate this platform, and then now people who are 20 and 30 can get it, not at 40, 50, 60, you know, and just shave years off the learning curve. We're creating it and we're giving it to you. We're giving you the knowledge. We're giving you the access, right? And that's why I respect, you know, companies like Roc Nation and I won't mention the other, you know, companies that are doing NFTs like Decentraland and others. But anyway, like that's where we're going with it. I'm strictly looking at tech right now and how we can leverage tech in a lot of these other businesses.
I love it. And I think too, it's just like bringing the education piece to it. So people have the knowledge, the tools to be successful, to set themselves up in their career, because you're right. There's a lot of people that fall through the cracks or not getting what they need. Just the little I've heard in the industry, you know, way more than I do. So I'm not even to pretend. Yeah. But with that being said, I think it is just important what you're doing. And that's a huge reason why I even wanted you on here as well, because of everything that you've just accomplished, but everything that you have going on too. So people can have more knowledge and can be able to reach out and get the right information and the right tools to be successful.
Appreciate you so much. Thank you.
I'm having a blast, but we're going to jump into the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them. Yeah. Okay. The first question is, who is your hero?
Oh, that's a good one. Listen, I don't have one. And I know that sounds weird, but I just don't. And you know, people have asked me that, role models and heroes. I just don't have one. I don't look at man like that. I don't. And that's not a pride thing. I just don't, you know, for me, I didn't have that. I just want to be the greatest version of myself. And that's not trying to be arrogant or cocky at all. No hero. But this is supposed to be rapid fire, right? Okay.
Well, I mean, you can go as long as and deep as you want. But with that being said, what motivates you to work smarter?
Not working harder. Yeah, that's it right there. Not working harder. Seriously. And it just mitigate risk.
Fair enough. If you were a superhero, what would be your power or powers?
I literally want to hear what people are thinking. I feel like I can do that now. Negotiating deals or sitting down or walking into a room and meeting people. Like my spirit is so sensitive to that stuff. But I want to hear what people are thinking at all times. Does it sound weird?
No. I do. No, I mean, that's a pretty good one. Because then you would know like everything, you know, all the subtle things that are not spoken about. So if you were to share a meal with any four individuals, living or dead, who would they be?
Four. Wow. Ooh. Four individuals. Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs would be one. Just for the innovation, right? Like just the mind, the thought process. That part of Steve Jobs. Another one would be Warren Buffett. Because listen, the wisdom, you know, the knowledge you would acquire. I know what I would extract. What not to and what I mostly would. So Warren Buffett would be a big one from the like financial investment aspect, learning that way. Another one would be Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather. And I say that because the dedication, like the ability to go through like, you know, endure and just like dedicate your life to something and never, ever be distracted. That's insane. You know, he's given his life to the sport of boxing, literally. And it's awarded him making billions of dollars, I'm sure, by this point, and having an incredible undefeated record. So I would want to know like what that drive. And then another one right now, actually, damn, that's hard. I would just put Jay-Z on there right now. I would put Jay-Z on there, and this version of Jay-Z that is, you know, executive and prison reform and sports management, entrepreneurial, you know, Jay-Z. Even in a charity where just doing what he does, things that people don't even expect. You know, I walked into Roc Nation's office because Earl, he's the director of A&R at Roc Nation. He's actually managed my brother as well. And I walked in Roc Nation at their older office. I don't want to say where or address, but I walked in and I saw Roc Nation's, you know, logo. And then I looked up top and I had the Fenty Beauty, you know, Rihanna's thing there as well. And I was like, damn. Like, I remember Marcy Project Hove, Marcy Project Jay-Z, you know, Blueprint 1, 2, and 3 Jay-Z. And here I am in, you know, Los Angeles, and I'm in his office and I'm looking at Fenty Beauty, you know, and it was just incredible. So for me, I would want to pick their brains, you know, for different reasons.
Yeah, that's going to be a powerful table. I will say that. So if you were to think of your life thus far, what is the most daring thing you've ever done? I know you've done a lot, but
I'm just trying to think. Daring, like as a kid, daring. I would never do this again in my life. I was actually on a motorcycle. I was doing 160 miles per hour on a motorcycle on the Atlantic City Expressway at 19 years old in New Jersey. And I looked at the speedometer and I was in fifth gear. I had another gear to go, wouldn't go. But to me, that was the most insane thing I ever done. And I, you know, I'm pretty deep with it. So I just correlate that with like pushing the limits and taking risk in life and all. But I think that was a dumb one.
Yeah, my like palms got sweaty. I'm like, oh my God. Well, I'm glad you're okay. So what is the phone app they use the most?
Phone, actually, so no, it sounds weird. It's Facebook right now. It used to be Instagram. It used to be Instagram, but it's Facebook and then email, but it's Facebook right now, believe it or not. I mean, I still think there's a strong ad platform. I still think it's a huge platform to create community. I do. And I'm doing it. I use that more than Instagram right now, which is kind of weird, but.
Yeah, sometimes it changes, you know? So what is the last book that you've read or listened to?
Hold on.
You got it there with you.
Can you see this?
I can't see it, but.
No, I'm going to show you. I'm giving him a lot of promotion right now. He doesn't need it. Oh, can you see it?
Oh, no. Nope.
.com secrets and expert secrets. Russell Brunson. Actually, I've been in Expert Secrets a lot right now. Yeah, those are the book. That's the last book I read. Actually.
Perfect. Thank you for adding that to my list.
We'll talk.
Perfect. So if you were to have a movie about your life thus far, who would play you?
Who would play me? Oh man, you're giving me some hard questions. I don't know. I don't know who would play me. Like, I don't know. You know what's funny? There's this Puerto Rican kid with curly hair, and I don't remember his name. He's actually in Empire with Fat Joe. A lot of people know him, and they always just tell me I look like him. Like, he looks like me, kind of. But he would play me because he's like some like Afro-Latino kid from New York. Younger, and he's got like my, you know, facial structure, and like it's just funny, but he would have to play me because he plays that role. He plays like that young kid in the streets and all that stuff, so it'll probably be him. I don't know his name.
I can't help you there, but I'm sure he's a phenomenal actor. So what is your favorite family recipe, whether it's traditional or you make it together?
Favorite family recipe, traditional, no, it's got it. I don't know, because I do these crazy stuffed shells every year, and everybody loves them. And I do it like a crazy potato salad. I actually cook a lot. So we have our like tradition every year. We make a lot of Puerto Rican foods, a lot of Latin foods, Hispanic foods, whatever you want to call them. So we do that a lot every year. And it's like everything. So too many to name.
It's a feast. So if you were to describe yourself as an animal, personality type, style, what animal would you be?
My sign, I'm a Sagittarius, Dr.
Ah.
What is it, like half man, half horse, right? Something like that. So it's like part human, but part like fearless animal, savage. And then you got the other, like, you know, that's savage, because it's like sharkish. And then you have, you know, the human element as well. That's like Achilles' heel, stands strong. So it would be like that horse, that sign, a Sagittarius sign. It's funny.
I could see that. Well put. So when you have a day off, or a few hours, I should say, how do you spend your time off from work?
I like a lot of things. You know, I really like, I like so many different things. So I'm very, you know, I guess you could say impulsive when it comes to stuff like that, but I hiking, I love it. I love motor stuff, like motorsport stuff. I would want to be on a four-wheeler or, you know, exercise, gym stuff. I'm a health freak as well, so I like that. There's so many different things. You know, sometimes I just like to take a drive and clear my mind and listen to new albums and new records and new music that's out, you know. I like to spend time in, I love to eat, I love to, I'm all about experience. So I like, don't like the, I don't like, I'm not, I am a stuff person, but not too much. I really don't care about like materials at this point in my life. I've like done so much stuff, but I just really, I don't know. I like experiences, mm-hmm. whatever it is. I like to experience new things. Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, you know, it's life. But what is something an outsider wouldn't know about your industry, whether music, credit?
Music entertainment industry, it's not what people think. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors in there. So a lot of cars are rented, a lot of houses are rented. A lot of artists' deals are like recoupable and they're not recouping their advances. A lot of the jewelry is either rented, people lease and rent jewelry or is fake. So a lot of it is not for all, but a lot of the people coming in, you know, the persona, the character, you know, there were so many times where I've met someone who I highly respected and listened to as a kid, and then I met them in person. I'm like, oh, no, I'm so disappointed, you know, or like hurt. So yeah, that's a big thing about the industry. There's a lot of like false hope, a lot of sharks, and a lot, many people don't know that. They don't. Yeah. That's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I didn't know all that either. So I just learned something new.
Be careful. Some of your favorite artists, pop artists, rap artists, country artists, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. You'd be surprised. Seriously. I'm sorry, but it's the truth.
I appreciate the truth. But thank you so much, Deep, for coming on today and just sharing all your wisdom, all your stories. It's always a pleasure, but I'm just so grateful that you got to share your time and energy with us today. And I know so many people have learned so much from you. But thank you again for coming and spending time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you. I wish you much success and abundance of health, wealth, prosperity going forward. And I love watching you grow, just everything. You know, a lot of people, you're tapped in everywhere. You're running Clubhouse on YouTube, Instagram, doing interviews with all type of people. So I'm tapped in and I'm happy for you as well. So thank you. It's an honor to be with you right now.
Thank you. And make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Deep today? I'm sure he would love to see that comment. I know I would too. And we'll see you on the next video.